Helping Hand. It is a weekly feature here on HPR One stations statewide, also online at HawaiiPublicRadio.org in our growing online directory. Each Friday afternoon, we try to put the spotlight on an organization or event in the community that offers assistance to the disabled and to other folks who are in need. Aloha, I'm Dave Lawrence, and this week we are privileged to be learning about the United Cerebral Palsy Association, UCPA of Hawaii, a nonprofit volunteer health organization, according to their website, working to positively affect the quality of life for kids and adults, and generally with folks who are dealing with cerebral palsy or other severe disabilities, their website notes. UCPA of Hawaii, part of a nationwide network, approximately 93 state and local affiliates, and the one here, according to their site, providing services in the island since 1959. Also one of four independent nonprofits, part of a collaboration I'm looking forward to learning more about called Diverse Abilities. And some of the organizations in that are familiar to regular Helping Hand listeners. Assistive Technology Resource Centers of Hawaii, that would be one. Hawaii Centers for Independent Living, another, among the folks that are part of that. We welcome our guest, and we'll learn more. Donna Fouts from the United Cerebral Palsy Association of Hawaii and Executive Director. Thank you so much for coming today.
Thank you, Dave, for having me. A delight.
I really appreciate it. And for folks, I'd like to, you know, I've been doing this bit for almost a year now, and I found through doing it each week, I've learned a lot of things about stuff that was, sometimes you hear things over and over and you think you know it, and you really don't. So if you don't mind, a little mini introduction to, and am I pronouncing it right, cerebral palsy?
Actually, and it can be pronounced cerebral or cerebral,
okay.
But you did great.
Because so. I've heard other people pronounce it different,
yeah.
And I thought, have I been saying this wrong? So I went. So anyway, so cerebral palsy, a little, if you can, something about how it originates, age that it kicks in, first symptoms, that sort of thing.
Sure. I think to a lot of people's surprise, cerebral palsy is not a disease, so it's not something you're going to catch. Basically, cerebral palsy is permanent brain damage, and when it happens, sadly, there is no cure, but in many, many cases, we can help prevent, and secondly, we can help manage the condition. I often, when I go out and talk to groups, do this little analogy that I have them pretend like they're we've got the brain, and you have three functioning areas of the brain. You got the muscle movements, and you got the speech center, and you have the intelligence. So you have these three different parts of the brain that work together. CP affects muscle movements or speech.
And this is, so we're talking about, and it's, so there isn't one, that's maybe, is that why it says other severe disabilities? Because cerebral palsy, if I'm reading you right, it can be a variety of things that revolve around the damage to the brain?
That is partially correct. I think to many people's surprise, though, they think we only service those that are affected with cerebral
right.
palsy. And actually, no, we provide services for a wide variety of disabilities.
So it's a unique condition that affects
very good.
It.
Very good. Yes, yes. And when you have it, since it's not a disease, there's no drug yet at this point that's going to cure you. But what we do know that there are many therapies that can help prevent. There are many other forms of therapeutic interventions and activities that can support a child and a family. Generally, you said, when does it kick in? Usually, we say during pregnancy, during birth, or the first 3 to 5 years of life.
Okay.
After that, if you have a traumatic brain injury, and a prime example would be James Brady, who was with President Reagan.
Who got shot.
Got shot. He basically has cerebral palsy. He has limited mobility and slurred speech. Intellectually, nothing's wrong with that man. You know, he's as sharp as ever. But when it happens later in life, it's called traumatic brain injury.
That's a great way of describing it. So it's a lot different than anything I thought. So, yeah, so he was an otherwise seemingly healthy man. He was shot in the brain. It then creates cerebral palsy.
Correct. It manifests itself in that you've
that
got...
That is what it is.
Yeah, right.
Those series of conditions that he then suffers from can also be called...
Could be called cerebral palsy, yes.
Okay.
Yes, yeah.
That's interesting. Okay, that really does, and I'm sure that's an education, and I'll figure out a way to condense this for the on-air portion, because that's really enlightening to me. I had no idea. So then... happens when you're very young, It's either discovered in pregnancy, at birth, or in the first 5 years of life?
About first 5 years of life. Interestingly enough, we see the highest rate of CP once a child is born. Child abuse. Somebody in a fit of anger smacks that baby or shakes it so hard. We're talking hemorrhaging, permanent brain damage.
So something like this, you're really talking about what are the causes of it and that you deal with. Are there typical lots of, you know, so you're pointing out in young kids, is that like the number one reason that they would have it? Or
once a child is born, actually premature birth, modern technology is amazing. You know, probably 100 years ago, a child born, it may be only 24 weeks, 26 weeks instead of 38 to 40 weeks gestation. That child, possibly the body wouldn't be developed enough to be able to survive. You know, the lungs would be too weak and we just didn't have the support to keep them going. We do now, but a lot of it because the rest of the body hasn't formed properly yet because there's just so premature that there are going to be other issues. And CP is very possibly one of them.
I get it. So CP is a lot of things.
Yeah, it is.
It's big.
Yeah.
It's not, I mean, the inclusive factor is gigantic. We're talking about from little kids who are born with these developmental disabilities.
Correct.
All the way to adults who some idiot just guns them down and then they're dealing with it.
Dealing with it. But again, like I say, at that age, my gut and, you know, who
but
am
that
I?
That is still cerebral palsy.
It is.
Or is
but,
it
but,
not?
But,
it's not traditionally thought of.
It's not traditionally called that, yeah.
But it technically would fall into the definition.
Would fall in, yeah. If that same situation happened when the child was birthed to five CP.
Right, because, you know, I don't remember when because he just passed, and I don't remember them really describing it in those terms.
No.
But that's good to know. So, because, again, a lot of times you narrow down what you think something is based on, like, a popular perception or just innocently, you know, you don't know.
Oh, exactly. And heavens to us, I continue to learn, and I've been with UCP 29 years. So.
What got you involved?
Interesting. I'm a local girl from here, and my undergraduate degree was in recreation. And so I worked for a couple of YWs on the mainland before I moved back, and I worked for the YW here for a little bit. And I really got into programming, and then from there, you kind of move up and start fundraising. Once you get into fundraising, you become nonprofits' best friends. And so then I worked with the Jerry Lewis Telethon and MDA, and then the executive position for Cerebral Palsy opened up, and I thought, you know, I think I'd like to give that one a shot. And
no, that's cool. Well, I mean, that's a good reason to want to help out a lot of different folks along the way. And then on the topic of how you guys connect with people who are facing these kind of conditions in the community, undoubtedly there are a lot of different folks at different points in their life that you're coming in contact with. For people who may have a loved one or themselves are facing these challenges, how can you guys be of service in general as a part of their life?
Yeah, great question. We have a variety of programs. Probably the one that first got us going, and we did start back, as I think you said in the beginning of the program, in 1959 during statehood. Yeah, I wasn't an exec then, but I feel like sometimes maybe I've been here that long. But interestingly enough, it's this program called our Child Development Center. Hawaii, you know, we may get dinged in many areas of things that we seem to be the bottom of the pole, but actually early intervention, providing support to young children with disabilities, birth to three, we're actually one of the top 10 good now ones in the nation. We have an extremely supportive system. So if a child is born and it is noticed via the parent or going in for a doctor's visit, oh, my child seems maybe a little slow, not quite up to speed I'm reading.
Or anyone in the child's life is listening.
Yes.
To make sure that, you know, they've consulted with the guardian and say, hey, I heard this thing, you know, are you guys connected? You know, have you checked out these programs?
Right. So this early intervention program that we do, our Child Development Center, the child comes, we're talking occupational therapy, speech therapy, physical therapy, and special ed, as well as social work, you know, working with the family. And, you know, a lot of people say to me, oh, come on, Donna, the child's 3 months old. What are you doing PT for that child? And I will tell you, Dave, if we don't move those muscles for those babies who can't, atrophy will set in.
No, I get it.
Yeah.
I totally understand the nature of giving that therapy and keeping them moving and keeping them active. You don't want to develop bed sores. There's all kinds of things to keep
people
moving.
So we work with the child. We teach the family. You know, these are things you can do at home. You know, challenge the child a little bit, you know, in terms of putting something a little out of their reach, you know, teach them to reach, teach them, you know, we want to learn, obviously, we want them to be their most highly functioning area. And what that will be, we don't know, but there are.
But you'll help educate the parents or guardian to try to get them there.
You know, and I tell this on myself, the first national convention I went to for cerebral palsy, and I got in the elevator on the 29th floor. I remember this vividly. In the 28th floor, the door opens and in comes this man, reclined wheelchair, a respirator that's helping him breathe, and a speech communication board. And I'm thinking, oh, I hope this man doesn't die in the elevator. And I'm, hello, you know. And we get down to the bottom, have a nice day. And he, you know, on his speech communication device with a little electric eye up here goes, you know, you too, bye now. Ends up, I go in, who do you think our keynote speaker is for this? The conference was this man. Amazing. You know, so this physical body, I often say that to people. I think CP, you know, you see a body and, you know, oh, you know, is everything clicking there? They just got a, excuse the expression, a cruddy body that won't perform, you know. But intellectually, everything is going. So amazingly, even though sometimes speech is affected and people don't, you know, think the person is making any connection, all of a sudden, once they get speech boards, they get, you know, technology on their side, they go, oh, my gosh, these people have so much to say. You know, we didn't know. So I often think technology is wonderful for all the social media things it can do, but for a person with a disability, oh, it's a gift. It's a wonderful gift.
No question. I mean, the technology is a huge thing, and people have so much potential more than you know. That's a great illustration of the vast potential that people have that their body is no gauge of, and that guy is that's huge. The challenges that he faces and that he goes on with. Should be an inspiration for anybody who's listening.
And it was for me. It still is.
I mean, I'll be thinking about that one. The Apple Cider Vinegar Dare to Care Challenge.
Oh, I'd love to tell you about it.
I want to hear about it. Tell me what's going on. It has a lot. It's not a tongue twister. It's a phrase you can say easily, quickly, but it does require looking at it.
Yeah. Actually, I don't know what, you know, your system is feeling like. I actually brought some vinegar today if you're feeling up to the challenge.
I'll do it.
Oh, I love it. I love it. What basically it is, I have to say that with the Ice Bucket Challenge, I was overwhelmed and pleasantly just how neat that this particular disease, this condition, ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, was getting so much attention because of this challenge.
And money.
And money too, yes. And I went, wow, this is neat. So, you know, we kind of talked in the office and I said, you know what, I would just love money. Yeah, you're always looking for money, but our challenge really isn't about money. It's really about bringing public awareness to people with disabilities. So we just kind of did a soft launch and have started it. And now we're trying to get on social media that we're doing this Apple Cider Vinegar Dare to Care. And what it is we're saying, will you, as the public, take one tablespoon of vinegar and in one swig, you know, swallow it down. And there's a little zing. You kind of go, whoa. And our hope is when that zing happens, that you will for a moment realize that people with disabilities have those zings and challenges every day in their life. And you know what? By you doing it, sort of tipping your hat or giving that salute, you know, I appreciate who you are and am caring about, you know, that your life is different than mine. And, you know, I'm doing one for you.
I love it. It's very inclusive, too.
Yeah.
The way you set it up. I think it's cool. You've got, you know, anybody who's facing special challenges.
Special challenges. And so some people have said, well, if we want to send money in, I go, sure, that's very good. But we're not saying it has to be to United Cerebral Palsy. It can be to any group that works with people with disabilities, you know. And I say, put down in the little memo box, Dare to Care Challenge. You know, I don't care where you live, what state it's in. You know, that's not really what it's about. It's not UCP of Hawaii trying to make a killing on this. It's really UCP of Hawaii just wanting to get the word out, you know.
Yeah, and being very inclusive to people with any kind of disability, and also giving people who are inspired to do this, if they do want to give, and that's great that you have that kind of awareness is enough for us mentality, but if they do want to give, that's so... it's awesome. It's kind of like the Spirit of Helping Hand, which is a lot of different organizations that help people in need. I like that you make that so you can help whoever. You know, maybe it's your aunt that had MS. Maybe it's your grandfather who, you know, was homeless at one point and, you know, you're sensitive to that. Maybe you knew someone who was battered, whatever it is, and you know these organizations are out there and are staffed with people like yourself who are working to try to make sure that these folks who are really under the gun have something extra. And it's neat that I guess it also goes hand in hand with learning about what cerebral palsy is too, because opening it up to all these other disabilities and organizations is also because cerebral palsy is in fact a lot more than, you know, as I've learned today, you know, so it fits that you would make it that way. Well, I'm glad to do it myself, Donna, if it means anything to you.
It does. I've got the vinegar here. I've got a tablespoon.
I like that. It's radio, but she has it in a nice little bag. And this is how many people have tried this so far? How long has the campaign been in there?
We just kind of kicked it off last week. And I've gotten some wonderful emails because we sent it to all our affiliates on the mainland. So I've gotten some nice feedback that way. And then just had an opportunity over the weekend to... going to one of the TV stations, so got them kind of kicked in and doing it. And it's so funny because after I was done and I was leaving the station, the cameraman came up and said, you know, may I do it? And I said, oh, sure. And then it ends up he has an aunt who lives in Australia with cerebral palsy. And he said, I just want to tell her I did it. And I go, wow, you're a good nephew.
You exactly. Know, that's what I'm talking about. You set up a good idea. I love the way you can talk about it, too. You have a it's very inclusive. It's cool. It's not like you're... it's just cool. It's nice to have that that approach.
Okay, I'll let you hold the tablespoon so that I don't...
Right, you're going to trust me to do that. Okay.
Yeah, let me get pretty full here for you.
Nice,
okay,
look at
there
that.
There you go. Oh, full tablespoon. Here he goes, folks. And he does it in one swallow.
Woo!
Woo, he says.
It's like we're having salad dressing.
And jokingly, someone said, oh, I'll do it. Do I get to add a little balsamic vinegar and the bread? And I go, no. You know, we want there to be that zing. And it is. You kind
yes,
of,
it is.
Yeah, kind of, oh, my goodness.
It's good around lunch, though.
Yeah, there you go.
or dinner. It's good around dinner time.
We did check medically, you know, there's no harm in, you know, a tablespoon. Actually, there's some theories out that it's actually quite good for you.
See, so, it could be like they kind of. Like wine or olive oil.
Olive oil, there.
Or as Larry King used to hawk decades ago, garlic.
Garlic, that's right, that's right.
Used to do the radio ads for that. I can't forget them. So we did that one. I have to catch myself up here. I'm a little off. There is the other thing, in addition to the apple cider vinegar dare to care challenge, which I'm proud to have participated in, diverse abilities. We were talking about adaptive technology and its value in the community. And as we were talking, I didn't want to interrupt you, but it did make me think of when the Assistive...
Technology and Resource Center, ATRC.
And the ATRC. You couldn't have said it better. It's as we get into the future, one thing that about technology that is cool is it's an impact on the disabled, both in design implementation for wide use, whether it's in public spaces or for people and their own personal needs. Diverse abilities is a collaboration that you're involved in with some of these groups. Let's hear about what that effort does.
You know, this started about, oh gosh, over 15 years ago, and a bunch of nonprofits, you're always kind of moaning, you know, wish we had a little more, you know, resources to take care of the needs. And a bunch of us have remained close friends, and we got together and began brainstorming. And we said, well, what if we came about this from a different way? That what if we looked at the assets, you know, what do we have that we can provide? And it was sort of like a potluck, you know, well, I can provide this. Well, I have these kind of resources. Well, I have this. Forgetting what we didn't have, you know. I mean, we all knew that a lot of things we didn't have. When we put it together, it kind of became a real interesting design. And we said, wow, if we were one organization, so to speak, we really could hit the disabled population in a lot of different ways. So we went to some funding sources. They very much liked the idea. They said, wow, this is kind of novel that nonprofits are working together, because for so many years, you really kind of prided yourself on you know, your bag of tricks that you had, and you really didn't want to share it with anybody.
Right.
And this really was a trust that we had to make with each other, and we shared a lot of those trade secrets. Mm. And the next thing you knew, once you did that, there were these rippling positive effects. And so we said, you know, we think forming another group. So we formed this Diversability. And what I always tell people is, please think of it not as an umbrella group, but as a platform group, that it's below us and we as nonprofits are on it and it's able to support us. It has taken us many, many places. I think I did the math recently, and I think I could say that probably over $1 million of support have come that I don't know that I personally would have gotten as United Cerebral Palsy in 15 years. I think, wow, that says
something.
So how's
it work to help? Give an example how it helps the people.
Sure. So what happens is, as a group, we've gone out and been able to get additional funding oftentimes that maybe Cerebral Palsy couldn't. So we've gotten additional funding that way. Then additionally, we have shared some of our resources, whether it's personnel, whether it's equipment, or, hey, I've got an idea for a program. You want to go. For example, United Cerebral Palsy National had a great program, but it was more with employment. That's not an area that our cerebral palsy here really is heavy on, but we're very good friends with the people called Abilities Unlimited, mm-hmm. or it used to be Winners at Work. They've changed their name, but AU. And I said, let me call our national and see if you can get funding, even though it was only for UCPA affiliates. But because we were an affiliation, we were able to pull down, I forget what it was, $50,000 for 3 years.
And so you help each other when you see an opportunity.
Opportunity. So there were things as a national that I could provide.
I get it.
That, and all of a sudden, it's infectious. It's
and that's
amazing.
For special. And then people, so if people have, if there's a special need from somebody in the community, then you guys can kind of pull your resources like that.
Collectively work together. And again, like I say, going out for funding, when you're one person going out for funding, oh, that's a great idea. You're two. Oh, that's pretty good. You're three, four. Wow, you guys will work together. You'll share the money. We go, yep, you know.
So that's a way that it, for folks who are in need, that if you let them know your need, then it's now on the table. So then, as you know, there is a potential to reach out for funding sources, you guys know, well, this person is in need with this and they are facing these challenges, and maybe this grant becomes available and you can use Diverse Abilities as the organization that's the recipient of it.
Very good. Yeah. Real different, and it takes a while to kind of get into the mindset, because, you know, you see, oh, something come across, oh, I got this money. And then I go, you know, I have to think differently. So that whole idea of collaborating, and I guess I'm a jock at heart. I love sports. I play sports. And it's really the team approach.
You know, that's what it sounds like.
I'm only a good soccer player if I need a goalie, I need a midfield, you know, I need a striker, you know, or if I'm a baseball team, I got to have a good catcher, I need a good pitcher. But so that's how we looked at it, that we all at different times are the pitcher or the catcher, you know, that we each play these different roles that are instrumental for the whole team. And for us, the team is people with disabilities.
Yeah, no, I get it. I totally see. And there, that's the way to, it's kind of like the same sort of approach to, when you say that you guys, you got to have a flexible kind of approach. It's like the design thing. If as the technology gets better, you can figure out ways, you know, that to utilize everything around you to make it as accessible as possible. You know, whether it's where the light switches are, the desk, and it becomes a lot more of a place that someone who's disabled can also enter and go, wow, this really, really works for me.
Yeah.
And that does happen. I'll give you a great example just
Please.
Because for the sake of this interview, because I hope someone will hear it someday, is I used to go to a lot of concerts with my mom. My mom was in a wheelchair, and a lot of the time, because, you know, she turned me on to music, she got me into it. And so a lot of the time when people are excited, they stand up at shows, you know, and arenas were never, the wheelchair area was always an afterthought at most venues. Mm. This place that they have, the place that replaced the Philadelphia Spectrum, so the indoor arena in Philadelphia, which I forget the corporate name it has now, maybe the First Union Center, whatever it's called, it's like their 18,000 seat indoor arena that they have there. And when they built that thing in the mid-90s, whoever it was who did the building. They put a number of these sections. So throughout the venue, periodically, the sections would have this area that was open and a security staff member there. So I went to see Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young with my mother and father there in 2000. And I'll never forget going to our seats. And I had already known from going to some basketball games what would happen because I'd seen it in work. That's how I was like, oh, I can't wait to go into this with Mom at this place. And you would pull up to that section, and the security guard would open up a small gate to a little mini elevator that would rise you up 3 feet. And everyone who was disabled was on a platform that was raised 3 feet up from the rest of the seats in the section. So, hence, like you and your party, you want to stand up and whatever.
Right.
It's never going to block the view of all the disabled folks.
Cool,
so just imagine that.
That is,
I mean,
wow.
And I've been to venues all over. I'm privileged to. I'm lucky to have seen all these different things. And never did I see a design like that. So just imagine every single person in a wheelchair. Like, you know, if you want to stand and enjoy the show, you're never going to feel like you're infringing on them behind you.
Right.
And they're not going to have to buy a $150 ticket and have someone standing in front of them. So I just have to say, because it's like a design implementation that whoever thought to do that, it was very conscientious. It was unnecessary, but by the design standards that you see everywhere else, but it would make you think, well, it should be everywhere.
Yeah. I would have to believe that somewhere in that designer's background, they've been exposed to disabilities, you know, that they want, I've got a sister or a mother or, you know, somebody. Boy, that sucks that they can't, you know, hey, I can change that. I mean, and you would hope that'll become prototype.
You know, God bless that that goes. Let's hope that someday people are like, well, that's the way it is.
Yeah. Like I say, and I heard it on Dave's show. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I just like to give him some credit because I'd never seen anything like it. And it was just a great, great thrill to do it with her. The Dessert Fantasy 2014. Is that something that we can lend some support to?
Oh, of course. We're very big on special events to help raise the shortcomings that we don't get from other sources of funds. And this is one that started as our 30th anniversary. We did it as a birthday party kind of thing. And we had cakes and ice cream and cupcakes. And everybody said, well, this is so fun. We ought to charge tickets next year. And we went, good idea. So we've been doing this for, 26, 27 years now.
Wow.
And it's really enjoyable. We have a hotel grand ballroom at Pacific Beach Hotel. 1 to 3, 2 hours. You pay a flat fee, $25 ahead of time or $30 at the door. And you can come in and eat for 2 hours straight, over 50 of the yummiest desserts in town.
Wow.
And I used to always tell people, I was sure it was that big football player that's going to eat you out of house and home. And I'm going to tell you, that's not who you want. If you want to match somebody, it's that little Oriental woman, probably about 65, doesn't even hit the scale at 100 pounds. And I go, oh, one plate, I can match her. 2 plates, 3 plates, 4 plates. I go, where does she put it?
That's a great way to sample a lot of. And those are area. Who is providing the food?
Oh, we try to top restaurants. And
so it's a variety of sources.
Oh, a variety. Yeah.
Oh, that's
and
great.
So we always have about 50 different desserts. And
50 different places, too?
Yeah, 50 different places, yeah.
Is the date? What's the date of the
date year? Is November 2nd, Sunday. And it's set, and people can go online to our website or certainly call our phone number, which I'd be happy to give, 532-6744. And you can purchase your tickets if you want. And we've got a children's price, a little bit less, and then actually kids under 5 or under are free. So it can be a real fun family affair.
Yeah, it sounds like a good family, so especially for kids or anybody who likes sweets or chocolate or stuff.
And then to keep, because trust me, though you think you can eat desserts for 2 hours, you know, you need to slow down, pace yourself. We have several tables of silent auction items, which kind of is fun, you know.
Oh,
so at
cool.
least, you know, okay, well, I'm going for round 3. I'm going to walk over to the silent auction and take a look. And we've got some great items.
And you're
there.
Doing it all for a great cause, which is really the most important part. And are there, what else could you guys, are there supplies? Are there people with certain talents, cash, in addition to... in addition to getting folks to participate in the Apple Cider Vinegar Dare to Care Challenge and check out the Dessert Fantasy 2014, how else can we help you?
You know, another way, and it may seem kind of a far-fetched, is that probably during your dinner hour, you may get that call from us, or if not, at least you may at least just get our postcard. We are one of three nonprofits, Big Brothers Big Sisters, along with National Kidney, that come pick up gently used clothing and household items. And those, all three of us sell it to the Savers store. And we're paid by the pound. So people say, oh, you know, this shirt might be, you know, a couple years old. I go, put it in the bag because, you know, it doesn't matter. They do very well with all the donations. We're not our donations, but of course they pay them for it. But that alone, our foundation raises over $120,000 every
fantastic
a year for us.
That's a great way for folks to help you.
Yeah, and heavens knows we all, you know, gosh, it used to fit last year.
Those are just clothes?
Clothing is one, but we'll take small household items. We don't take, like, large couches. I always tell people if it's something that would take two people to bring it out of your house, we probably won't take it.
But you'll come and get it.
Will you come and get it? And
where exactly? Is that just on this island or is that statewide?
Pretty much that's just Oahu at this point, yeah.
That's good. Well, it's good to know, and it's a great asset to be able to help you and be able to clean out and not have more stuff. Less stuff is a good thing in almost every single case. Finally, on the volunteer aspect, which is another portion of it, are there specific skills that you may be looking for from folks in the community?
Generally, our volunteers we will use for special events, so we can train you pretty quickly on it. We're one of the few. We do about 7 events a year. I think we're the special event homecoming queens when it comes to that. But we do the Great Hawaiian Rubber Ducky Race, which you may have heard of.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, that's us down the Alawai.
So a lot of opportunities.
You know, we have the dessert event. We have a golf tournament. We have a tennis tournament. We've got a few other, a boat building one. Yeah, you name it.
A lot
it.
Of ways to be a volunteer if you don't have resources or another way to help out. Again, you said it once, but phone number 808-532-6744. Online, ucpahi.org. And there's an email contact form if you'd like to email, and that's easily found in the contact portion of their website and at hawaiipublicradio.org. You can get all the contact information here, the full interview, the short interview, and get all of the other Hawaii, or all the other Helping Hand segments on demand online. No doubt you help a lot of folks. There's a lot of stuff that you're doing, and forgive me for not being able to cover it all. Is there any other critical items that you think in our conversation you want to add for people to consider?
No, and I just want to tip my hat to you for your continued interest in the nonprofit community, those in need, and it's amazing. You know, we don't have large advertising budgets, you know, and to be able to get the word out, to talk, and your understanding of, you know, many of the conditions in our community, I thank you very much for doing that. We are most appreciative.
Yeah, you're welcome. I do it on behalf of my mom.